For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
How many goals will Jamie Benn have by the time the puck drops against Chicago?
I'm going to say one.
Interesting. Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that half predicted Jamie Benn would have one goal at this point with about a week to spare, and the other half is me. It's time to do a little bit of stargazing. Mark, anything to say as we kick off tonight?
Aren't we the best of friends?
Of course we are. Of course we are. And for those
did I not just put Jamie Benn on hat trick watch?
I mean, you put him on a heater is what she did. And I think we were talking in the Slack. We got to pick. Maybe we'll run a survey with our next episode. We got to figure which Dallas star do we want Mark to supercharge next?
Well, I think that's a no-brainer. I mean, it's Miro. So yeah. That was a suggestion. And I don't see. Otherwise, I'm going to do something stupid like, say, Joel Kiviranta or someone like that. And then people will go nuts.
You've got to use your powers for good and not evil, I think, is the way to go. So yeah, just to put into context, right? We're going to talk about, you know, tonight's game. We're recording on Thursday after the victory over the Florida Panthers. We're going to talk about Jamie Benn, the way that Dallas is winning. We're going to talk about penalty trouble. I'm going to go on a rant. Mark and I are going to get into a fight. It's going to be fantastic. But before we do that, so the last time we recorded a podcast, for those that don't follow the show religiously, was October 28th. And at the time, Jamie Benn was sitting on one goal he had not scored yet on the season. And as part of our wild end of episode predictions, I asked Mark, you know, give me something crazy. And we talked about Jamie Benn, and the prediction at that point was Jamie would have one goal by Thanksgiving. Of course, this was on October 28th. Since that prediction was made, Jamie has six goals. And just on top of that, so again, coming into that prediction, Jamie had 3 points on a trio of assists. 3 points, that's it, that's all. And now, Jamie Benn is up to 15 points in 16 games, so almost a point a game. So Mark apparently wound up on the bulletin board in the Dallas Stars locker room and has triggered a beast mode explosion, the likes of which we have seldom seen in Starsdom. And I just want to say thank you for the amusement and for the performance, because this is clearly down to your influence.
Well, you know, I did say some really nice things about how Jamie was going to contribute, and that line was going to use him to kind of pull in Wyatt Johnston and Ty Dellandrea. And I will point out that we did see that coming to fruition with the empty net goal tonight.
The Ty Dellandrea-est goal of all time, the way that one, there were about three times when I thought that puck was going to find a way to bounce out the way that Ty's season has been going in terms of goal scoring. But yeah, Ty had a golden assist tonight. Johnston had I think just one assist, or did he manage to get going to the score sheet? Yeah, he just had the one assist tonight. But
just one assist, but he had that sweet little pass feed to Dellandrea that Dellandrea planted in Bobrovsky's pads. And so it's good stuff from that line.
It's good stuff. Yeah, I mean, honestly, and we'll go ahead and segue to the good of it. So talking about the Stars, so as we sit here right now, Dallas is atop the Western Conference. They've got 22 points. They do have some extra attempts in the in their division. They are third in the conference behind the Kings and the Golden Knights, but Dallas is atop the Central. They've got games in hand on everybody at this point. Dallas has played 17, Winnipeg has played 14, Colorado 15, the Wild 16, but they're accruing points at a healthy clip, an encouraging clip. Things are going very well. And I think part of it is what you've talked about. Jamie is producing now, right? He's almost a point a game player. He and Delandria and Johnston have been a very effective unit, especially since you yelled at them, which is awesome. And then, you know, we had as well another 2-point night from Tyler Seguin tonight. He had a goal and an assist, which puts him at, you know, for his part, he's at 11 points in 16 games on the season. So he's not quite where Jamie is, but he is contributing. And you know, on top of that, I think Jason Robertson was third in the league in points coming into tonight. Yeah, he's sitting at 25 points in 16 games. And oh, by the way, he scored in his 10th consecutive game tonight to set a personal best. Rupe had another pair of goals. He's at 20 points, a paltry 20 points in 16 games. So right now, right, in terms of the forwards, it's sort of our best case scenario. You've got the first line doing everything that the first line normally does, and we're getting secondary scoring throughout the rest of the lineup, which is, you know, this team is a handful heading forward right now, and you just love to see it.
Yeah, and you know, one point of clarification, I think you said Ben, you asked me how many goals Ben would have, and I believe Jordy does have one. So I'm not out of this yet.
You're not out of it yet.
And it was a sweet goal. Hey,
technically correct, yeah, I mean, is the best kind of correct.
Yes. the team is hitting on all cylinders offensively. And, you know, the shocking thing, I think, tonight, what, we kept Joe Pavelski off the score sheet. And that's kind of hard to do with as many pucks that went in the net. And we had Luke Glendinning on the score sheet.
How is he
going to
face his linemates after tonight?
Yeah, it's like Pavelski and Kiwi Ronta, I think, were the only one that was out of point. Glendinning had an assist. Fox had assists. How can you lose that way?
I mean, it's very difficult. But yet, and we'll go ahead and use this as our pivot, right? And yet, they turned a kind of breezy 5-1 lead into a, you know, 6-4 with an empty netter victory, where they had, you know, they had to get out of some late trouble. So yes, the offense is rolling, and yes, Dallas is doing very well. They've got a plus 19 goal differential. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10, but it's not like they're just perfect. There are some flaws here, and there are some flaws here that might end up coming back to really haunt this team if they can't get them fixed.
Yeah, and here, you know, I'll throw in one bit more of the good news side. They're in first place in the Central, and they've played a majority of their games on the road.
Yeah,
so they're racking up these points in tough environments. But going back to what you said, what we saw tonight, I think, was maybe the first time that we've seen the team go full turtle, and that was a little weird. I might kind of toss it up there to it being the end of it was a 3-game road trip. It's really 7 straight games in a different building every time.
Yeah.
And I think they're maybe mentally ready for a homestand.
I think so, there's that. And I think as well, like, score effects are a thing, right? You score 4 goals in the first period, and then your goalie gets hurt under some pretty troubling circumstances. So I don't disagree that this was, you know, there is something to be said for finishing, you know, kind of staggering through the end of a trip, and hey, they got the dub and they got it in regulation. So, you know, there's only so much we can really complain about it.
Yeah, but you know, the penalties, the power play wasn't really sharp tonight. The penalty kill was also not really sharp. The way they gave up that fourth goal to Florida was really you know, Keystone Cops. You know, how do you let Chuck come in wide open like that and leave Ottinger out to dry? So, yeah, you know, but, you know, we're so used to now this team keeping the foot on the gas, and it was kind of odd to see him going into the shell. And it kind of shows you that, yeah, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose fighting and going forward.
Yeah.
Because that was uncomfortable tonight. And you didn't think it was going to be uncomfortable, even, you know, yeah, there's momentum changes, but even, you know, once you get to the 10-minute mark in the third, and they seem to have it kind of locked down a bit, you think you can take a breath, and no, you can't. If you're turtling, you're in trouble. And this team can't lock it down like a team under bonus. So, it's not just turtling; it's bad turtling.
Yeah, and I mean, I would argue that they were never turtling has never been good. They've just been better at it. It's not the fact. It's one of those like judge the process, not the outcome. And anybody that works for me is going to be cringing because I say that all the time. But just because, and it's I'll use the penalties to make a point of this, right? So Dallas, on the whole, on the balance of the season, is currently third in the league. They've got an 85%, 84.9, but 85% rate on the penalty kill. So far, the penalties they give up haven't murdered them in the sense of, you know, necessarily. I mean, tonight it was two of the Panthers' goals were on the power play, so it hurt them tangibly. But it's also like, the minutes that they spend shorthanded are minutes that you don't have the Hens line out on the ice. It's minutes that you don't get to play. You know, it's soaking up pressure. It's scrambling. It's all. So it's one of those situations where looping in the turtle to this as well, just because they survived it, right? Just because Dallas has a great penalty kill right now, just because they're able to hold on, just because they've turtled in years past, doesn't mean it's a good thing for them to be doing that, right? It'd still be great to have, the penalty kill probably wouldn't get much worse if it was half as active, right? And it's the sort of thing that worries me in the long term. Even, you know, it's the sort of thing that worries me in a playoff series in particular, and it's way too early to start talking about that, but I'm gonna do it anyways, because, you know, one of the quirks about hockey is, you know, during the regular season, you can't really game plan around a specific team. You're traveling too much, you're adjusting on the fly, and yeah, there's, you know, for divisional opponents, there's some stuff you can customize. But when you have a pronounced flaw like that, you know, the inability to stay out of the box, think about the bubble playoff run, right? That eventually, that did them in against Tampa Bay, right? Is once you have an opponent that has the time to kind of game plan against you, if you've got a flaw like that, they're going to ring your bell. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, it's wonderful. Let's celebrate how good the kill is, but also let's do it less, please.
Right. And what it also does is it means that Miro Heiskanen's minutes are going to be extended, and they're going to be extended in ways where it's not really productive for him. I mean, yeah, he is a great defender, but what you want him concentrating on is moving the puck up the ice and creating offense and setting up people so that they're playing defense by being in the offensive zone. And the thing that concerns me about any of this would be that, and we saw this when the offense went into a bit of a slump there earlier in the season, you start worrying about the team dropping into old habits. Yep. And when you're implementing a new system like this, any time you drop into an old habit, you have to kind of force yourself back out of it, saying that's not the way we're playing this year. And so that's why you kind of cross your fingers and say, yeah, well, this is maybe a reminder that yeah, we used to turtle and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, this team doesn't have it's not that team anymore. This isn't a lock it down, don't give them a sniff squad. And that's okay. Right. Because the flip side of that is there's scoring, there's fluidity. This team can play defense by keeping the puck away and keeping it in the back of the other team's net. And that's probably better. It's more sustainable. Right. Because for a lot of different reasons. Right. But yeah, it's something they're going to need to clean up. It's not, I feel like I'm talking to one of my kids. It's not cute anymore.
Exactly. And speaking of not cute, you were going to come to the defense of not Mason Marchment,
no.
but who picked a fight with Mason Marchment in the end? And you,
it's Tkachuk. Yeah, it's a pet peeve. And I'm glad this is a segue, because part of it is, you know, and we've seen it in the offense. They're a little bit looser with the puck, the penalty trouble, you know, coughing up leads. Like, there have been, it seems like, some composure issues with the team. And a microcosm of that is, I just think, and they won the game and it was fine, and he's played well. So this is hardly me. This is hardly me putting Marchment on washed watch or anything like that. But like, the sequence with the fight with Tkachuk at the end of the game was just a catastrophically stupid thing for a hockey player to do. His team is up a goal. They've already had to switch their goaltenders midstream. And yes, Ottinger is a fantastic goaltender, but it is a different challenge coming into a game than starting one, right? So his team is at that stage, right, somewhat clinging to a one-goal lead. They draw a penalty that gives them the opportunity to kill off most of the game. One of the, you know, one of hockey's foremost family of pests, right, comes up for the specific purpose to goad Marchment into doing something stupid and canceling the power play, right? That's the only reason Kachuk wasn't standing up for anybody. His entire purpose was, my team just made a mistake. Maybe I can con one of these idiots into making a mistake too. And guess what? Marchment said, I will make a mistake. I will do something stupid. And it was one of those throw your remote at the TV moments where, no, it didn't hurt them tonight. Right. They scored the empty netter. They won the game. They wrapped up their road trip. All is well, you know, all is well in Whoville. But it was just a stupid play. And it never should have happened. And Marchment needs to have the sense to skate away. And that's my rant.
And I appreciate your rant. And sometimes you just can't skate away.
And you can always skate away.
Oh, you cannot always skate it away. If he was put in a situation where he was either going to take the first hit or he was going to deliver the first hit, and he chose to deliver the first hit, and yeah, maybe that's stupid. I don't know.
Take the first hit, and then Kachuk has the instigator, and then light the kid up.
Oh yeah, and then the refs find a way to even it up anyways. That was a pretty weak call. I would say I think Marchment wasn't all that interested in that fight. You could kind of see it in the way that he took it, and Kachuk got bailed out by the refs, and
he did. Yeah, but it's the classic case of, like, you know, the old adage of, like, nothing good happens at 3 a.m. in the morning, right? Like, nothing good happens waiting into a scrum late in the third period of a one goal hockey game, right? Especially, like, you know, NHL referees love to even stuff up, right? They are afraid of the perception that they have influenced the game. And so with a penalty, it's just in that game situation, with a penalty against the team that's losing pending, you just have to not. You can't give the referee an excuse to do something stupid.
Oh, I don't know. It's so hard.
Florida, I think, comes to Dallas at some point later this season. You will play him again eventually. Punch him in the face then. Take a receipt. He's a Kachuk. He will deserve it.
You're gonna have to do that anyway.
As much as he deserves it now.
You're gonna have to do that anyways. And it's almost in my mind, like, some guys can get away with that. There are some guys who can kind of punk you and kind of act like they're gonna drop the gloves and then skate away and laugh at you on the way out and wave at you as you go to the penalty box. And that's not Mason Marchment.
No, it's not. Which is probably why Kachuk picked him instead of some of the other people.
Well, plus Kachuk was the one who had his moderately slashed out of his shall I say.
He had every reason to feel aggrieved, and he had every reason to want to punch Kachuk. I am in no way saying that he wasn't justified in his actions. All I'm saying is that maybe skate away singing the word scoreboard over and over and over again, and then score on the power play. You know what I mean? Like, score on the power play, do a two-knee power slide right by the penalty box, and then fight the kid.
So pretty much what you're saying is you want Mason Marchment not to be Mason Marchment in that situation.
I just want him to be a slightly better version. I want him to be a different, like, wait till he's out of the penalty box and punch him then. I don't know. Just don't do it.
In his old house. That's his building. He's got his people there. There are guys in Marchment sweaters in the stands who are going to slink out of the building if he doesn't take that fight. He's got a brand. He's got to stick with it. Come on, get with the program.
I just think it was stupid, and I'm not going to bend on that. It was a dumb thing for him to do at a dumb time.
It was a dumb thing and entirely predictable.
You know what? I think we found an agreement. You're exactly. I'm not saying I'm surprised that it happened, and I'm not saying that it wasn't justified. So it was just dumb. It was just dumb.
Yeah. It's like Kachuk was smart enough to go after a guy who was gonna do what he did.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was. But yeah.
It was 5-on-5. That way we got Delandry a score in his second. We got Glendening his second assist. All sorts of good stuff came from this.
Yeah, it you know, Hintz's goals were both beauties, and Sagan got himself got it back on the scoreboard. Esa Lindell, by the way, apparently offensive maestro, is up. He got an assist tonight. Yeah. He had his 4-point night a little bit earlier. He's up to 7 points in 16 games.
Now, did I not say back at the beginning of the season that I remember watching Esa Lindell back in Cedar Park, and before he got under the influence of all these defensive-minded coaches, he was viewed kind of as a offensive defenseman?
You know, you did, and it's fair. And I'm going to give you those flowers because we've certainly ripped on you enough for the Jamie Benn hot tape. Yeah, you did, and it's funny.
Jordy Benn.
That's my fault. That's my confusion. Yes. But, you know, you're right. And the other thing is, he's also the guy, like, how many times have we heard the announcers kind of play up the, oh, he's got a great wrist shot, he's got a sneaky, you know, there's always been this, like, strange, like, rave subculture of Esa Lindell could actually score if the situation was a little bit different.
Now, what we ultimately come down to is that the thing that Esa Lindell cannot do is mule the puck out of the zone.
No. He is the master of the knee-high off-the-glass outlet pass.
Well, and that's probably good, because when he does try and skate it out on his own, it usually goes back the other way. So, I like Lindell's game a whole lot more than most other people that we talk to on a regular basis. I will grant that's the one thing that I shudder about. He needs to find his other D and let him carry it out.
I will say that I have, and it wasn't just this season without Klingberg, but over the last season and a half, I feel like I have had a greater appreciation. I've been able to separate more the things that Lindell doesn't necessarily do well from the things that he does. And, you know, I don't know that I will ever, to some degree, not blame him for, you know, not blame the Stars for kind of equating him with Klingberg in a way. Like, the contract thing was still messy. And, you know, I don't know that I'll ever just be like a S. Lindell super fan, but I'm getting out of the zone where I'm mad at him all the time.
Well, it's the contract is, and we have a long history here at Defending Big D of liking the player but not liking the contract, and I think Lindell falls into that. You know, if that was a $3.5 million contract, I think we'd have a whole lot more Lindell fans.
I like where we're at.
Yeah. Do we like where we're at with Colin Miller getting a healthy scratch?
I mean, I have, and this is going to be mean because I'm sure he's a nice fellow, but I have issues with Joel Hanley. I just, every time he plays, I look at him and I think, what was the point of 9 minutes and 18 seconds of Joel Hanley tonight? Like, why did we need that?
Well, because he was a +1 on the score sheet.
That was
the difference of the game.
I just feel like that's not time that is well spent.
Understood, but cut the guy some slack. He's there on a $750,000 contract, and he can play one game every 3 weeks, and he can come in and be not noticeable.
Yeah, he's completely, you're 100% right.
That is the ideal seventh defender. And every once in a while, you kind of have to bite the bullet and give him a little game action, or else he's not going to be able to. You know, if you keep him in the press box for 3 months, who knows what's going to happen?
What are you going to do with those 9 minutes and 18 seconds?
Well, you may lose.
You might notice
him, and that's, Hanley's,
that's what we don't want. He is the what is it from Parks and Recreation? He's just sitting there in the defensive zone going, don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Yeah. And you know, every once in a while, Hanley, you know, at least once a game, there's something that Hanley does where he takes away a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
He does an amazing thing once a game.
You're right. I mean, like I said, none of this is, I'm not mad at the player. It's just one of those like situational things where it's one of those, like, there's nothing better you could do with not, it's, it's somebody pouring a nice glass of scotch and then adding Coke to it. And it's like, why there's, you just use some bull. I don't know. Use something that's not, that's my Joel Hanley analogy is Joel Hanley is a Jack and Coke, but instead of Jack, you're using like a 18-year-old scotch. It's just like, yeah, it probably tastes really good. It probably tastes better than a Jack and Coke. You're a lunatic. Please don't do that.
Yeah, and whatever you do, don't tell me that you're doing it.
No, never do that. It's just my fear in life isn't my kids getting into the liquor. My fear is the kids getting into the liquor and then mixing the nice stuff. I just if they're gonna do it, just do it right. If you're gonna play a defenseman, play him 15 minutes, like 9 minutes. What are we even doing here?
Yeah, well, you're getting a little game action and making sure he's ready, and Colin Miller comes back, and we're there.
Yeah,
that kind of brings me. One thing that amazes me about this team, this team for the last couple of years has been able to play fairly injury free.
Yeah, except for their goaltending.
Yeah, except for their goaltending. Yeah,
and Tyler Seguin's body, all of it.
Yeah, but even there, you know, with Seguin, he's gone for the year, so you kind of plan for it.
Yeah. You know, I guess you're right. It was just the one catastrophic injury that took him like 2.5 years to recover. It's not like he's been consistently hurt. He just got broken. It took a little while to get past that.
Yeah, and it's almost like, well, there may have been a forward year since then, but we had that one year where we went, 15 deep on the defensive end, and everybody got hurt. And ever since then, it's kind of been, you know, you get an injury here, you get an injury there, but for the most part, you got the same lineup every time.
Yeah, I think Miro's missed, 3 games this season, and that's it?
3 games, and Gurionov.
Yeah.
And really, that's
the opposite. That's about it. We put Ben on blast, and he goes on a heater. We start praising Gurionov, and he gets hurt. So such is the power of the podcast.
yeah, and now we need to make sure that we get Matei Blumel scoring on all these opportunities.
Oh man, he could have had another one tonight, couldn't he?
Yeah, and I think he had it, but he took too long to get there, and the defender got back on him.
I think, but yeah,
right. So some of this, he's learning him? Speed.
What has been your impression of his first 3 games in the NHL?
I mean, he's a volume shooter, and that's something that we really haven't seen since early Tyler Seguin on this team, and it's sorely missed. I kind of wish we bumped Delandria back up to Seguin and Marchman, and put Blumel on with Johnston and Ben. I think his game fits a little better there, and Johnston and Blumel, I think together would be dynamite.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be fun. And with Grandpa Ben keeping the kids under control, taking everybody to Dairy Queen afterwards for a freeze.
Do you notice Jamie kind of, he's pretty protective of those guys.
Yeah.
Delandria got a little into a little confrontation in the corner there in the second period, I think it was. And Ben just comes in like a bull in a china shop and say, "Oh, that's my boy."
Yeah, Papa Bear has always kept an eye on his crew. He's that is one aspect of captaining that he has always, I think, been. You're right. He's when he's on the ice and a fracas starts, Jamie Benn always joins the party.
Yeah, but here I think he owns this. This is his line, and these are his kids, and he's raising them right.
I like that idea. Oh man, I'm gonna throw another line combination at you, because this is just I want you to try this on. This wouldn't be everyday wear, right? This would be special occasions. But I'm thinking about Hintz's first goal and that little toe drag pass from Tyler Seguin. And yes, you don't ever want to dink with the first line because they're the best line in hockey. But as an option, do we think that we might be at a point in Sagan's recovery where every now and then flashing him with Hintz might, if you had to shuffle life, if you wanted to spark something, if you needed to change a matchup on the road, am I crazy in thinking that might be a viable option?
I would think so. I mean,
granted, part of it is that Hintz is just amazing, right?
true. But I mean, there's just a bunch of things that, you know, Seguin is doing now that he didn't used to do, and I think his game's matured, maybe because it had to. But yeah. there was actually an interesting piece going around by a guy I follow named Chance McCallum. It's a Chase McCallum. It just was out today, and he was saying that you judge the quality of a line by the quality of the second best forward on that line. And it's pretty heavily statistically done. So it's maybe not for the faint of heart to read, but that's one thing that kind of strikes me about whatever the Supernova 2 line that we have there. It's almost like the third best guy on that line could be the best and have a good second line mate on another line.
Yeah.
And perhaps be more productive. And I hate to say this with as deep as this team has shown to be, but you know, if things do start going south, I think there are some matchups that we could utilize like that, that even if it's within a game where you want to shake things up, could work.
Yeah, it seems like contemporary Sagan plays well with guys that are direct and guys that have speed. And like that, again, I think it's part of why he's having, and Marchman isn't the same type of player exactly as Hintz, but there's something to be said for like Sagan he's gotten to the point where he's patient with the puck. He's got the skill, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the speed that he wants. He's not necessarily blown anybody's doors off, but he can control the puck in space. He can find ways to create passing, and he can create that extra moment that allows a guy like Hintz to get the step that he needs to get a, you know what I mean? So I felt when I saw that goal, a part of me was just like, well, this could happen again. And it seems like it's something, you know, hopefully Pete DeBoer is filing that one away in the we'll try later bucket.
Right, exactly. And the nice thing about Sagan is that, you know, with his game, you still have to respect the fact that he could just snipe one on you. Mm-hmm. And so you can't cheat off Tyler Sagan.
No.
And that's nice to have, because that'll keep the goaltender just that one more split second from rotating over and leave him a nice wide open net.
And I think in past versions of the Dallas Stars, right, you could never break up the big line because, to your point, there wasn't the secondary talent, right? You weren't the guy that you were putting, you know, when you moved Spets off the top unit, right? Who was he playing with? And this, you know, and we're a pretty healthy chunk into the season. You know, 16 games is not nothing. And so we're at the point where we're starting to see, like, there are some guys, you know, Mason Marchment and potentially Wyatt Johnson, and the way that Ben is playing and the way that Sagan is playing at the moment. Like, there are some guys, Delandria, for example, like, this might be a team that, again, you never want to go away from something as strong as the Hintz line, you know, permanently. I'm not advocating, you know, dismantling your top unit, but to your point, as a game situation, as a change of pace, like, it's I think it's a viable option this year in a way that it hasn't been in previous.
Yeah, and I mean, you end up with these individual matchups where, you know, if you run into a team with a really strong shutdown line but not mm-hmm. much else to go with it, and you're on the road and they're just matching up ideally with that Robertson, Hintz, and Pavelski line, you roll something out a little different and make them adjust to you.
Yeah. That's the name of the game.
Yeah, well, the thing I like about that and having these options, you know, regular season is one of these things where you kind of pick your program and you run with it, mm-hmm. and you either make or break it based on your skill level and what that scheme is.
Right?
Yeah, you don't micromanage game situations because nobody would ever know what they were doing. By the time you make it to the playoffs, that's where you get this flexibility where you can manage against the team, and that's. We said the last couple of years, you know, this is a team made for playoffs. And we kind of said, yeah, they were big and heavy. I think you start talking about a team that's built for the playoffs. That's a team that doesn't have a whole lot of noticeable weaknesses that can be exploited, but has the flexibility to change to exploit weaknesses on other teams.
I think change to exploit weaknesses, also change to negate strength, right? To your point.
Correct.
If you're in the playoffs and you got that shutdown line, you're gonna try and man straight up your shutdown line against the Pavelski and Sons group. Well, if you're Dallas, your options in that situation are to either double down and hope that they fight through it, or move them apart. If you have two lines instead of one, then all of a sudden that nifty shutdown unit you have isn't particularly useful. And in previous seasons, Dallas didn't have the ability to do that, but now they might, and that's going to pay, you know, that's going to pay dividends later, I think.
Yeah, and right now I think what they're showing is that they have it without splitting up that top line, and yeah. So you have a top line that's delivering over 40% of the goals for the team, and everybody else is contributing.
I think you're right. I had one other question that I wanted to ask you, because this is something we were joking in the DVD Slack ahead of the game, talking about who else we wanted to call it and put on a heater, and Taylor chimed in and mentioned Miro Heiskanen, and if you have his numbers in front, tell me. But what in terms of offensive production, where is Miro right now?
I don't know the exact numbers. He's looked very good, and especially, you know, the what surprised me with Miro this year is just how effective he's been on running that number one power play unit. You know, and here, I don't know that I can place this all on Miro. The schemes that we're running that allow us to enter the zone are so much superior than what we're doing. And that, you know, both units are getting set up. But once Miro's there, he makes wise decisions. He times his passes well. He hits the tape on sticks. And that's why this unit can be so crisp with their passing and why they've been so successful. And I think Miro, I think this is only going to get better. I'm fully expecting Miro to be in the Norris conversation, specifically because his offensive numbers are going to be pretty darn good. Yeah. And then you just can't, you know, at a certain point, you just have to say, and he is so much better defensively than anybody else in that conversation. Yeah.
And I won't leave you in suspense. So after tonight, he actually didn't have any points tonight, the slacker. Yep. He has 2 goals and 10 assists for 12 points in 13 games. So for all of our talk in the offseason about how Dallas needed Miro to take a step forward offensively and to be a difference maker and the transformative effect that would have on the team, he's playing at a point a game pace as a defenseman, while doing all of the defensive stuff you talked about, and extending that, he's got a goal and 5 assists on the power play. So he's got 6 power play points. So, you know, we talked at the start of the season about how with some of the changeover on this roster and needing more offense and, what it would be like to have him unshackled. Guess what, right? Dallas has a point a game defenseman who is chipping in on the power play consistently. And it's foundational to this team being what it is.
Yep. And I will just throw one last thing out there. And wow, Nils Lundqvist. That was a way to score your first goal for Dallas.
Yeah, it was. And it was a great play by him. A part of me is going to cringe, and Bobrovsky made himself as small as he could possibly. It's one of those situations where it is a cringeworthy goal if you're a Florida Panther, but to have the presence of mind, to control the puck all the way around the offensive zone, and then to have the presence of mind to realize the goalie was doing something foolish and take advantage of it. Yeah, it was a beauty. It really was. No, and Lundqvist, I think, he's been a really good pickup for Dallas.
Yeah, I think maybe New York is regretting not finding a way to keep him around. Because he's been blocked, sure, in New York, but I think he's demonstrated this year for Dallas that he's a regular NHLer, and a player like that young is somebody you have to find a way to keep on your team.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped that just also putting it in context, right? So as a 22-year-old defenseman, he changed teams relatively late in the offseason, and you know, yeah, four assists or 1 goal and 4 assists, right? So I guess 5 points so far this season. He's not blown any doors off, but like the challenge of having to change organizations late in the offseason as a young player, young defensive player in particular. And it's not like he was the only guy stepping, you know, it wasn't like Dallas had one slot in the defensive group and just plugged him into it and it was otherwise. Like, he entered a situation of change and of churn as a young defenseman changing organizations, right, and has looked comfortable from day one. And that's been Dallas desperately needed a little bit of defensive stability, and he's been able to step in and do that, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, literally, Dallas had 0 slots for him. I mean, that slot was Thomas Harley's to take. and Lundqvist just came in, and within a couple of days, there wasn't really talk about whether Lundqvist was going to be there.
Yeah, he's been a good pickup. He's been, and we talked about this, I think, in previous podcasts, right? Credit to Jim Nill for going out, and it's not just that he found a guy, right? It's that he found a critical guy, right? It's so hard, you know, to what's the Friedman line, right? When teams know you need something, they don't throw life preservers, they throw anvils. And to have to go out into the market and find a player to play an important role, a player that you didn't necessarily have time to bring around slowly, just to find a guy and hope for the best. Like, hey, that was a good one. That was a good trade. He's a good player. Dallas is better for having him.
Yeah. And no more talk about Miro on his offside. Until tonight, of course. But it's just been a perfect fit, and it's only going to get better. It's cost control. It's cost effective. You know, if we didn't have that contract, you know, where would it be cap space wise? And that's probably worth an article right there. I probably need to do a cap article here at some point. Good stuff for Neil.
Yeah, good. There are complaints. There are valid complaints, but I will go to the mattresses for Jim Nill's ability to manage the salary cap as GM of the Dallas Stars. He's always found a way to do that one proper.
Yep. Hey, anything else interesting going on? Are you ready for a homestand?
I'm ready for a homestand. I'm cautiously optimistic. They were saying post game that Wedgwood didn't end up having to go to a hospital. He was being evaluated by medical staff in the building. So there's some hope that he, of course, left the game about midway through, tweaked his back, ended up having to be removed, non-contact back injury, had to leave the ice on a stretcher. But they're saying that the stretcher was just kind of one of those abundance of caution things. He didn't have to go to a, so, you know, on a human level, obviously you want him to be okay. On a athletic level, he's been a very good backup goaltender for the Dallas Stars, so they need him to be okay in a lot of ways. And, you know, we talked about the cap, right? This is a team that doesn't necessarily have the flexibility to call up Anton Khudobin. So there's you hope that he is okay for a lot of reasons. And then the other thing I'll say is, we talked, the other bit on my mind, sorry, I'll pause if there's any Wedgwood related comments you'd like to make.
No, I think you hit it all on the head.
So then the other thing on my mind is, this is going to be a big and interesting week. So, you know, Dallas is about, they've got the homestand coming up. Their next game is against the New York Islanders, who, after some early kind of drama, are now quite good. They're 8-2. In their last 10. So that's going to be that Saturday. That's a big game. They've got Colorado. Now the Avs have sort of struggled a bit, right? But hey, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And they still have some superfluous talent, right? Cale Makar and notably as a foil to our own Miro. And there's a lot there. They're 7-3-0 in their last 10. So that's another good squad. They'll get a little bit of a breather against Chicago, and then they'll get a chance to make amends for a fairly flat showing against Edmonton in a back-to-back, Edmonton and then Colorado again. So this coming week, right, starting on Saturday through Saturday, is we're going to get a really good sense of where this Stars team is in terms of their competitiveness when, you know, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag, right? So they beat the brakes off of the Kings, they beat the brakes off of the Coyotes, they beat the brakes off the Oilers, then they kind of fell flat against the Jets, dropped a woebegone 5-4 decision against the Sharks, recovered against the Flyers. I would argue they played mostly okay, but a smarter team beats the Lightning on Tuesday and then beat the Panthers tonight. So we've got a little defining stretch, some early season defining stretch action coming up.
Yeah, 5 games in 8 days after coming on the road. It's pretty vital, and you know, it's actually it's 6 games in 10 days if you add in going back to St. Louis to end the month. So yeah, and a lot of Central Division matchups, teams mostly healthy. Hope, you know, fingers crossed on Wedgwood, because we, you know, it'd be wonderful to have him in net for a couple of those games. Yeah.
And then the thing that stands out to me, right, is just looking at the standings. So, you know, we mentioned they play the Avs and the Jets, right? So Dallas has 22 points through 17 games. They are 4 points up on both the Jets and the Avalanche. However, the Jets have 3 games in hand against the Stars. The Avalanche have 2 games in hand against the Stars. So those, you know, circle the calendar. Those 2 games next week, or I guess 3 games because they play Colorado twice, those are the kind of decisions that you know, we talk about. They're in a great position right now. This is a really good moment for Dallas to start banking some points, building some padding, extending their level of comfort in the Western Conference, right? And so it's a good test for the team. As I've said it before, I'll say it again, I suppose.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're 4-point games, a lot of them. And, you know, you built up all this goodwill by playing so much on the road early season, and now you get a little home cooking, and you can't just squander it.
Yep. So, you got to make the best
anyway,
of it.
Anyway, speaking of home cooking, happy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much.
Same to you. Have a great one. KT, you as well. Everyone out in listener land. Don't forget, before you slip into your turkey-related comas, to download and like the podcast. We will connect again after this really fun stretch of games, and we'll see if we still like where we're at in a week, Mark.
I got my fingers crossed that we can keep Jordy Ben up the scoreboard, so I can keep my perfect streak rolling.
The perfect prediction. I love it. Well, thanks for this, and thanks for listening. We'll catch y'all next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.